As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
What follows may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
The world is full of stories. Stories of mysteries. Of curiosities. Of oddities. Join Kat and Jethro Gilligan Toth for the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected, as they lift the lid and cautiously peer inside the box of oddities.
Oh, hey.
Hey.
So, this has been interesting, what with the article and the people and the photos.
Yeah, we had a really nice article written about the podcast on by The Main Edge, which is a statewide publication here in the great state of Maine. We actually got the cover.
And they were kind enough to be nice about us and not write down all the things that I said that immediately after I went, that was awkward. Sorry about that.
I was a little disappointed that they mentioned the 1969 Cadillac hearse that I bought as a restoration project, because now everybody's going to want to ride in it. I'm going to have it emblazoned on the side, the box of oddities.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, like silver metallic
right.
paint.
Zero of that's true. So, no, but they did such a great job, and they made us look like real coherent human people who spoke language. Like
we were good talk people.
Right.
Yeah.
I was just, yeah. So, big thanks to The Main Edge and Mike Dow for doing that for us. That was magical.
That must have taken a lot of editing to make us sound coherent.
You know? And all the photographs inside by Erica Layton of Closer North, who we just love. Who goes the first this week?
It's me. And, you know, I have a love for vending machines.
Oh, obviously, yes.
In fact, Kat bought me an old Coke vending machine a number of years ago. It was really in bad shape. It was all beat up and the paint was coming off.
You make it sound like I give great gifts.
Well, I'm getting to the good part. I asked for that because I wanted to customize it, which I did. I turned it into a Heineken beer machine.
It's very cool.
We'll post a photo of it.
And it was a fun surprise because Jay had tootled away from the house for a couple of hours and I had it delivered during that time and he didn't know it was coming. So it was good fun.
And I spent that next summer stripping the paint off of it and redoing it. And
you did such a good job.
Yeah, I got the right logo decals and I had a special insert made so that when it lights up, it says it has the Heineken. It looks great.
And now we're trying to sell it.
Yeah, you want to buy it? Well, we just can't get it in our RV.
Right. That's the problem. Doesn't make sense.
We're planning for the future. But yeah, we'll post a photo of it. But anyway, because of my love for vintage vending machines, this story stood out. It's a bizarre tale. It's a true tale, okay. Of course. And it's about the Seattle Mystery Vending Machine.
Mystery Vending Machine?
Yeah. In Seattle, which is in Washington, in the United States of America, for those of you who may be listening abroad.
It's on the left.
It's on the left in the upper part of the United States. This vending machine, just out on the street, it's been there for a couple of decades.
Oh.
And it's an old vending machine.
Okay.
Nobody knows how it got there or exactly when it got there. one of the local businesses said that they know, and they've been there for decades. It's a locksmith business. They said it's been here for at least 25 years.
Oh, wow.
We don't know. You know, there's no servicing emblem on it. People have checked with the city. There's no permit on file for it. Nobody knows where it came from.
I have so many questions.
Nobody knows who stocks it.
Okay, that was one of my questions. It's a stocked vending machine?
Yeah, yeah. And it is stocked with unusual cans of soda pop. It has six buttons on it. And normally it would say, you know, Coke or Pepsi or whatever. It's just it says mystery on all six of the buttons. And you push one of the buttons and you just never know what you're going to get. Now, first of all, for decades, it has been 75 cents.
Okay.
Which is way below what it would normally cost in today's vending machines.
Sure.
Especially at an airport. you spend, what, on average, $1.25, $1.50 in the U.S. for a can of soda pop. Something like that. 75 cents, and it's been that way for years and years and years.
Okay.
And even though the beverages are created by either Coke or Pepsi, they're very often brands of soft drinks that no longer exist anymore.
What?
Like Crystal Pepsi.
Oh my goodness.
Or New Coke.
What?
Yeah.
Where is this coming from?
They don't know. People have staked out the area to try to catch people. And again, this is over a couple of decades. Recently, a few years ago, somebody did take a photo, allegedly, of somebody stalking the machine.
Okay.
But they're not sure if it's real. And that's one photo in two decades. Somebody
Whoa.
Has been stalking this soda pop machine for 20 years with off-brand, well, Coke or Pepsi brand products, but lesser known ones or ones that have been discontinued.
So every once in a while, you'll get a Mellow Yellow or a Tab.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so cool.
And nobody knows why. They don't understand it. It's on the Capitol Hill neighborhood in Seattle. In fact, it is on the corner of John Street and 10th Avenue East. Or it was. It mysteriously disappeared last summer after 25 years. And nobody knows why.
But did it reappear or did it disappear forever?
Nope. But of course, it has its own Facebook page now.
Of course it does.
And there have been photos. People keep posting photos of it all over the world, photoshopping it in, kind of like the traveling gnome kind of thing.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
Oh, here I am. I'm at the Eiffel Tower, and it's like badly photoshopped in. And,
right,
you know.
And the vending machine's holding its pinky and its index finger, like so that it looks like it's squishing the Eiffel Tower.
Exactly.
Yeah, I've seen it. Quick question.
Yeah.
Where is it now?
Nobody seems to know.
But I need it.
People are very sad about this.
Well, yeah.
In the neighborhood, in the Capitol Hill neighborhood of Seattle, because it has been such a big part of their lives. Well, in many cases, all their lives.
Their whole life.
And the fact that no one's been able to determine why it's there, when it was put there exactly, and who owns it. And, you know, they're not making money on this. 75 cents. And these cans of soda, in some cases, are rare. Like, what do you think a can of New Coke would go for on eBay? Not a lot of money, but it'd probably be $7-$8, maybe. Some of them are incredibly rare.
I just feel like, especially if you're someone, you know, who is, you know, just a little over 25 years old and your whole life that machine had been there and had been dispensing magical mystery sodas to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you are one of those people who gets something that is kind of weird or rare and, you know, maybe you've never had a Crystal Pepsi. Maybe you've never even heard of New Coke or Coke 2. Or maybe you're like me and you have very special memories connected to certain sodas. And all of a sudden you push that mystery button and a Mr. Pibb pops out.
Yeah. I think they still make Mr. Pibb.
I'm sure that they do, but I never see it. They don't sell it anywhere near me.
A lot of these brands.
I remember the first time I had a Mr. Pibb.
Where was that?
It was in Florida.
Oh, at Disney World. You told me this story.
That's right. It actually came up not long ago, which is weird.
You were at Disney during Hurricane Andrew.
That's right. I was a small person, and my family was at Disney, and we were staying at the Port Orleans Disney Resort, and what they had a vending machine down the way, and one of the sodas that they had was called Mr. Pibb, and I had never seen nor heard of Mr. Pibb before.
Wow.
So I gave her a roll. I was like, yes, thank you. Click, clink, chunk, chunk. And it was the most delicious soda I'd ever put to my lips. And I was like, Dad!
So you like it even better than Dr. Pepper, which was the original flavor? Because Mr. Pibb is kind of a Dr. Pepper wannabe. Oh, I've made her angry now. Okay.
Listen.
All right.
Listen.
What I meant to say was that Mr. Pibb
is an improved Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, that's sure.
No, I like them both equally, just in case Dr. Pepper wants to advertise with us.
Sure, sure.
Mr. Pibb's better. It's just one of those things that it was like I had discovered it.
Yeah.
It was no one sure. up here had ever heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
I was still, you know, in Maine in the 80s, everything was like the 70s everywhere else.
Sure. Yeah.
We were a little behind.
About a decade behind.
And so, I don't know, it was the early 90s when I went to Florida. So we were still catching up. And
sure, sure.
I was like, you guys. Seriously, you'll never even believe this soda that I tried. It's called Mr. Pep. And I swear, it's the best.
So this was the early 90s, but you sounded like an 80s Valley girl because you lived in Maine and were a decade behind the trends.
That's right.
Okay.
I had my hair in a scrunchie and a big donut on the front of my head.
Nice.
It was permed.
I remember I was into this weird soda pop in... the early 80s. They don't make it anymore. Called Rondo. And it was kind of like a lightly carbonated Mountain Dew.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That sounds horrible.
It was actually pretty good.
It reminds me. Rondo sounds like the boyfriend of your friend who you just don't like. And he never wears like shirts with sleeves. And you're like, oh, fucking Rondo's coming with us. I don't want to go anymore.
Yeah.
How do I get out of this?
So anyway, back to the mystery vending machine.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. The cans of soda pop that are dispensed are largely flavors that have not existed or have been popular since the 1980s. Other brands are like Lemon Lime Slice, Pepsi AM.
What's that?
I don't know.
Is that like breakfast Pepsi?
It must be Pepsi with caffeine. That must, or extra caffeine.
That's the worst idea ever. But I can see how they're like, well, people are usually drinking soda later in the day. How can we get them to start their day with soda? How do we corner this breakfast soda market? Aha. That was me in a boardroom just now.
Yeah, I could picture that in my mind. Yep. And you were wearing like a 3-piece suit.
Yeah.
But you didn't have pants on. And like boots that went up to your thighs and fishnet stockings.
Wait a minute.
And you had like a rider's crop and a pith helmet.
Hold on. Suddenly this got very strange.
Well, was that out loud?
Oh, wow.
Anyway, some more obscure drinks have popped out. People have got, let me see. I've never heard of this. Diet Hubba Bubba Bubblegum Soda.
Oh, my God.
Or bacon-infused Coca-Cola. When did that happen?
It has to have been recently. Bacon's been a real novelty thing the last, I would say, 10 years or so.
Yeah, it's got to be like probably.
It's weird.
But it's not always the case. Sometimes it just kicks out a can of Coca-Cola or a regular can of Pepsi.
Oh, wow.
But most of the time, it's these weird, less popular or discontinued brands. It's been going on for decades. It's so weird.
What about Shasta? Sorry, that's just a beverage that popped into my head that I haven't heard of in a long time.
Shasta's popular in Mexico and South America.
Oh, I suppose.
Fanta. That's what I'm thinking of. Fanta is.
What's the clown people drink?
The clown people drink.
Yeah, you know, it's the the clown people. They drink it like it's part of their thing.
Wait a minute. Are you trying to cite the number one beverage choice amongst the professional clowning community? The preferred refreshing soft drink choice of merry pranksters?
You know, the clown band and their Jesus juice. What's it called? Insane Clown Posse.
Right, yeah.
They're
Juggalos.
Their beverage that they love, that is part of their community. Faygo! Faygo!
Yeah, that's right. Faygo.
You ever find a Faygo in there?
No, I'm sure probably at times Faygo has.
It would be, be amazing.
Those clown people.
If you got a mystery beverage and a Faygo popped out and then your nipple ring got ripped out.
Oh, yeah. And everybody on the street starts chanting, family, family.
What the fuck is happening?
It's a gathering of the Juggalos right here on Capitol Hill. Now, because this machine is just a lone machine standing on a street corner.
It's not covered.
It's not covered. It's just right out in the elements. It's all beat up. It's been vandalized.
Sure.
It's chained to the wall.
Is it even plugged in?
Wouldn't it be great if it wasn't? I would love that. But no, it's plugged in, and it's plugged into a company called Broadway Keysmiths. And so everybody immediately suspects that they are the ones behind it because mm-hmm. it's sucking the electricity off their bill.
Right.
But if that's the case, then they've gone way out of their way to perpetuate this myth, because for decades now, not only have the owners of the store denied knowing anything about it, but all of the individual employees throughout the years, same story. We don't know. We just don't know.
Wow. But they're cool with paying for the bill because apparently. It's such a magical treat for the entire city.
Yeah, it brings people to the neighborhood because it is now a destination point, or it was until it disappeared. So you can come and you can buy your Faygo and get some keys made.
Yeah, I need keys made because I went to the grocery store the other day and I lost part of my key set. And so now I can't open the mailbox. Let's go to Seattle.
The machine has been broken into.
Yeah,
but mysteriously, it was repaired on site and restocked, and nobody saw it. Nobody saw it happen. The only instance of anybody reporting having seen the machine be restocked was this
that one time.
This one time where they claim a white van pulled up, then a couple got out, a man and a woman, and restocked the machine quickly, locked it back up, jumped in the van, and left. And there is a picture out there that reportedly is of that event, but that's it.
People just woke up one day and it wasn't there anymore.
Well, I found an article on a site called Today I Found Out, and I guess they were in the area. And so they went to the site. You know, it's a pilgrimage now.
Sure.
It's a destination site.
Is there like something there that says like this is where the machine used to be?
Well, they got there and the machine was still there and there was a line of people, but the machine wasn't working. It was taking money, but it was not dispensing any soda pop. So they said, well, we'll come back. They came back the next day. It was gone. And it has been gone since late June, early July of 2018. And as of the recording of this, nobody knows where it is. But in the site that it stood for over two decades, there was a sticker stuck to a railing and it said, gone for a walk. That's it. Nobody knows where it is.
But
nobody knows who's behind it. Nobody knows why.
Oh my gosh. I have so many feelings right now. What if like this sweet old man had this idea of like, wouldn't this be fun?
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, he used to work for a
beverage distribution company.
And so he had these old cans and he was like, what do we do with this?
Let's give them to the kids.
Yeah.
I got this old machine. Yeah. We'll just plug her in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he died.
Yeah. And he died.
I'm so sad. And then his widow had to go and get the machine. Yeah.
She discovered his lifeless corpse in the garage in a pile of Diet Hubba Bubba bubblegum soda cans.
And she's all like, I'm going to take this machine, but I'm going to leave this sticker here because he's just gone for a walk.
And see, he'll be back. He's just gone for a walk. On the Facebook page, there is a message, and the administrator of the Facebook page won't return any messages from the media, so they don't know if it was started by the people behind this.
Or just people who are fans.
But the administrator, I think somebody in charge of it, had posted, going for a walk, need to find myself, maybe take a shower even.
That sounds to me like he's going to get cleaned up and return.
Yep, that's what a lot of people have been hoping. But we're going on 9 months now since it's disappeared.
Well,
nobody knows.
It took you a while to revamp your vending machine.
I suppose.
What, that's like
true.
4 months?
Yes, but I didn't work on it constantly.
Well, who's to say old man Jones is?
That's
his speaking
name?
Of which, Jones Soda. Right? They make the best cream soda. Anyway.
Old Man Jones is the name you've assigned this mythical retired beverage distribution company work person.
Well, he doesn't work on it all the time because in the winters, he has to go to Florida and see the grandkids.
Sure.
You know, maybe in the spring he'll get back to working on it.
But if Old Man Jones is so committed to this, don't you think that maybe he would have passed this on to his son and his son's son? And so that's how it kept going for decades.
Listen, Old Man Jones wasn't able to have children. That's why he gave soda to the neighborhood kids.
Oh, now it all makes sense.
He wanted to share his joy with the chillins, but wasn't able to shoot one out of his lady's stomach.
Well, so let's just profile Old Man Jones. Old Man Jones, retired night watchman for a large major beverage distribution company, had a bunch of off-brand sodas in his garage and an old machine, decided to set this up for the kids because he shoots blanks.
Yeah.
He was sterile.
Yeah.
He was a sterile beverage distribution watchman who recently retired and died in his garage in a pile of cans.
No, I've revamped it. He's not dead. It just broke down and he went to Boca.
And he's not back to fix it yet.
Right.
Why would he go to Boca in the summer?
No, it's winter.
Yeah, but it disappeared in the summer.
Right, but he started working on it. He just didn't have time to get it done. Do you think that Brenda was going to wait for him to finish that before they went to Boca?
Okay, his wife's name is Brenda?
Yeah.
Okay.
She's got to get to that outlet mall.
I see. I understand.
She's going to get some Banana Republic capris.
And a snappy sundress from Anne Klein. I understand now. It all makes sense.
Well, yeah.
So even the guys at Broadway Locksmith and the random employees over the decades claim to have no idea who restocks the machine. They've never seen anyone open it up or put anything inside or collect any money, for that matter.
Mom.
And these guys are there every day. So whoever this is that was doing it, they were stealthy. I would really love to know what their motivation was.
I'm feeling a real Santa vibe about this story.
Yeah. I think you're probably pretty close to nailing it with your Old Man Jones hypothesis. Old Man Jones and Brenda.
Maybe also a little Santa stuff.
A little Santa as well. All right. You can find the Facebook page, Seattle Mystery Machine.
I just Googled it. 25,079 people like it.
Of course they do.
Some of the reviews. Definitely recommend its beverages. Always cold and a good shoulder to cry on. Hell yeah, I would recommend this great machine.
The Seattle population loves the mystery vending machine, and they miss it.
My one experience with MCM, which is what they call it, resulted in a very cold Sprite on a very hot day. Thank you for saving the day. If you return from your hiatus, it would be nice to add condoms to your dispensary. That started off nice.
Mm-hmm. So maybe some of the Seattle freaks have their own stories that they can share with us. At curator@theboxofoddities.com.
Oh my gosh, tell me all of your mystery machine stories. All of them. This pleases me to no end. Why are you broken? I came all the way from San Diego for you. Why are you broken?
That's quite a pilgrimage. San Diego to Seattle for a can of Mr. Pibb.
My friend told me to say it out loud what I want. And if I'm worthy, it will dispense that soda. I requested a Hawaiian punch, and then that's what I received.
No kidding.
All hail the mystery soda machine.
There are those who think that there is some sort of paranormal activity at play here. Personally, I think time travel. There might be some kind of a tear in the time-space continuum. And that machine is really there, always has been, but it's just 1972 that's just poking its head through into our reality in that one spot.
It's like a weak spot.
Yeah. And we can interact with the machine because the membrane is so thin between those.
Oh, like on Fringe?
Yeah, kind of like on Fringe.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right.
In fact, I think if you stayed there long enough, you might see Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah. Cool story, Astrid.
All right. That's it.
I love it.
And now, the Box of Oddities brings you That Thing in the Middle.
Today's Thing in the Middle comes from Strange History, a bathroom raider. Again.
So in 1870, the James Robinson and Company Circus and Animal Show wanted to drum up some publicity for its touring cavalcade prior to the performance in Middletown, Missouri. As the clowns, circus performers, and the animals paraded through the town, the circus band played along while standing on the roof of a cage that held two lions. Despite concerns that the roof wasn't strong enough to support 10 grown men, circus bosses ordered the band to keep on playing. So they did, right up until the moment the roof caved in. All 10 musicians plunged into the den of underfed lions who tore them limb from limb and ate most of their bodies. 10 band members started the parade. Only 3 survived.
The Box of Oddities with Kat and Jethro Gilligan Toth.
We love the Calm app, and we are so thrilled to have Calm as a member of our family of sponsors here on the Box of Oddities. Calm, CALM.com is the number one app to help you sleep, meditate, and relax.
One of the things that we do at the beginning of a new year is resolutions. And so often those are for our body. We want to eat better. We want to lose weight. We want to maybe start learning new things. We have so many goals. But how often do you do something that's good for your state of mind? And that's where I've really found the Calm app to be incredibly helpful. I've set up reminders where basically the Calm app says, hey, have you taken time today to like chill the frig out?
Now, there's a misconception that you need to be experienced in meditation.
Right, like you have to be a yoga master or something.
No, look, Calm makes it easy for you to just relax. And meditation can be part of it, but it's not the only part of it. Even if you don't meditate, Calm is a great app to have, especially if you have trouble going to sleep. I just read an article that said that the average person, it takes them 7 minutes to fall asleep. In my case, it's more like 2 hours before I got the Calm app.
Right. And one of the things that we found to be so helpful are the sleep stories. They're like bedtime stories for adults designed to help you relax before you doze off. So you can head to the lavender fields of France with Stephen Fry, or explore New Zealand with Jerome Flynn from Game of Thrones.
Or the paths of Machu Picchu. Which is one of my favorite sleep stories.
And Bob Ross is in there too.
Oh, with his happy little trees.
And if you head to calm.com/box, you'll get 25% off a Calm premium subscription, which includes hundreds of hours of programming.
Guided meditations on issues like anxiety and stress and focus. There's a brand new meditation every day called the Daily Calm. And of course, our beloved sleep stories.
Get unlimited access to all of Calm's content today at calm.com/box.
It's just for Box of Oddities listeners. 25% off Calm premium subscription at calm.com/box. calm.com/box.
For a limited time, Box of Oddities listeners get 25% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/box. That's calm.com/box.
Give yourself the gift of calm.
And a happy and healthy 2019. Oh my gosh, I almost said 2018. What is wrong with me?
You better start meditating more.
The podcast world is growing bigger every day, and Himalaya wants to help you navigate it.
Himalaya is a brand new podcast app where you can find every single podcast you love and some future faves.
Whether you're a podcaster or a fan, Himalaya has got your back.
Discover personally curated playlists and show your favorite podcasters some love with Himalaya's Tip Jar.
It's free, it's the easiest to use, and we're adding cool new features every day.
Go to your app store, download Himalaya. That's H-I-M-A-L-A-Y-A.
And don't forget to follow the Box of Oddities once you're there.
It looked so much bigger in the full color brochure. This is the Box of Oddities.
All right, what you got for me?
Okay. Your story was wonderful and magical and fun, and I'm a little giddy about it.
Oh.
I love it. And I'm going to bring this party way down
to a screeching halt.
Yeah.
Okay.
On November 22nd, 1983, the body of Linda Mann was found not far from her home. Linda had left her house the night before to go babysit for the lady down the road, and she didn't make it there. When she didn't return, her parents and her neighbors spent the night searching for her, and her body was found the next day on a path called Black Pad. She had been raped and strangled.
How old was she?
15. July 31st, 1986, Dawn Ashworth did not return home. And after 2 days, her 15-year-old body was found in a path called 10 Pound Lane. She had also been raped, beaten, and strangled. The pathologist who examined her body described it as a brutal sexual assault.
So where is this taking place?
It's in England in a place called Leicestershire.
Okay. Okay. I've heard of that.
And it's spelled in such a way that I had to look it up, how to pronounce it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I can see it in my head. There's lots of letters in there that don't make sense.
So many vowels. So many vowels. So the modus operandi was pretty much the same. And police were convinced that the murders were committed by the same person. So this is very early in the days of forensics as far as DNA goes.
Sure. Yeah.
A lot of police organizations had decided this is something that's going to catch on. This is something that's going to end up working for us. So even though there hadn't been anything that they had been able to use, a lot of organizations were collecting stuff that they thought could be used.
I love that idea, with the idea in mind that science and technology would progress to the point where they could use it in the future. I love that.
And the care that goes into taking care of a specimen that you don't even know if it's going to mean anything. And we've seen several forensics files where, you know, they end up going back to the case and they have this evidence and it's amazing. But anyway, so speaking to Linda's case, the first girl, they used forensic science technologies that were available at that time, and police linked a semen sample taken from her body to a person with type A blood. And they could tell that that enzyme profile matched only about 10% of males. But with no other leads or evidence, they left the case open but weren't able to move any further. When they took samples from the second crime scene, semen samples revealed the same blood type.
Okay, so that's narrowing it down a little bit.
That's right. Police did have a suspect. Richard Buckland. He was a 17-year-old boy with learning disabilities, and he had been spending a lot of time around the spot where Dawn had been murdered and telling people and the police that they were looking for the suspect in the wrong spot.
That's not too suspicious.
Right. He worked in a local psychiatric hospital, and he wasn't working that night, but he wasn't able to give police a definite answer on what he was doing the night that Dawn went missing. And so police arrested him. After questioning, he admitted to the crime involving Dawn Ashworth, but denied the murder of Linda Mann. In 1985, and this comes from BBC News. In 1985, Alec Jeffries, a genetic researcher at the University of Leicester, first developed DNA profiling along with Peter Gill and Dave Werrett of the Forensic Science Service. And Gill commented, "I was responsible for developing all of the DNA extraction techniques and demonstrating that it was possible, after all, to obtain DNA profiles from old stains."
Wow.
"The biggest achievement was developing the preferential extraction method to separate sperm from vaginal cells. Without this method, it would have been very difficult to use DNA in rape cases."
Wow.
Because obviously, you know, there's intermingling.
There's mingling going on.
Using that technique, Jeffries compared semen samples from both murder victims against a blood sample from Buckland and conclusively proved that both girls were killed by the same man, not Buckland.
What?
Buckland became the first person to have his innocence established by DNA fingerprinting.
No kidding. So he just copped to this for attention, or
he had
learning disabilities.
Yeah, there were some things going on there, maybe he
maybe he was scared, and
I don't know. I don't have an answer to that. What I do know is that in that article that was in the BBC News, Peter Gill stated that he believes that without a doubt, if it weren't for that DNA testing, he would have been charged and with Dawn's murder.
Wow.
So Leicestershire Constabulary, which is incredibly hard to say.
But delightful to hear.
And the FSS then undertook an investigation which took more than 5,500 local men that were asked to volunteer blood or saliva samples.
How many?
5,500.
5,500.
This was the largest sweep that they'd ever done. They were...
And this was what year?
It's either 86 or 87. Okay, so it's after Dawn's murder, which was in 86, but in 87, August 1st of 87, a man named Ian Kelly revealed to fellow workers at a Leicester pub that he had taken the blood test pretending to be someone else. So we know that the process of getting all these samples was between late 86 and early 87.
All right.
So Ian Kelly worked at a bakery, and he had taken the blood test while masquerading as Colin Pitchfork.
Colin Pitchfork.
Colin Pitchfork had come to Kelly and said that he couldn't give his blood under his own name because he had already given blood while pretending to be his friend who had wanted to avoid being harassed by police because of a conviction for burglary.
Mm-hmm.
A woman overheard this conversation where Ian Kelly is saying, yeah, I took the blood test for someone else. And she was like,
that's a little hinky.
How about no? Mm. And went to the police. Thank you, that woman. Her name isn't listed. I don't know who she is, but that woman needs an award.
That it's Leicestershire pub going woman.
I love you. Mm. This is what we need in the world we is do. More people going, that shit ain't right.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So Colin Pitchfork lived in Newbold, Verdon. He attended school in Market Bosworth and Desford. Pitchfork had been previously convicted of indecent exposure and had been referred for therapy at Carlton Hayes Hospital. He was married in 1981 to a social worker. After that, he lived in Littlethorpe, and the Pitchforks had two sons.
I just can't get over the fact that his name was Colin Pitchfork.
I know. It's pretty incredible. So after the attention has been called to Colin Pitchfork, he was arrested in 1987 in September. And during subsequent questioning, he admitted to exposing himself to more than 1,000 women, which he said was something that he had done since his teens. He just couldn't help himself. You can't not whip out your junk. He later admitted to having progressed to sexual assault and then eventually, to protect his identity, killing the girls that he had sexually assaulted.
Oh, my God.
It came out during this investigation that in November of 1983, he was driving with his baby son sleeping in the back of his car when he spotted 15-year-old Linda Mann walking along this darkened path, pulled over, left his baby in the car while he raped and strangled this little girl with her own scarf. He then drove home and put his son to bed.
Oh, my God.
It's rough. And that was one of the reasons that it was hard for police to understand how he could have committed this crime in the first place, because he had his kid that night.
Right, right.
And in one of the articles that I read, it said that he was babysitting, which, no, it's not babysitting if it's your kid.
Yeah, I don't get that. I don't understand that at all.
Anyway, that's off topic, but he ended up pleading guilty to both murders in September 1987 and was sentenced to life in January 88. The judge said that the killings were, quote, particularly sadistic, and he doubted that Pitchfork would ever be released. Mm. In 2009, his 30-year life sentence was reduced by 2 years for exceptional progress, a decision that obviously was strongly criticized by the victims' families and by other people, you know, who live places who are like gross. So it's May 3rd of last year, and Pitchfork was denied parole, but they said that he would be eligible for further review within 2 years. And then last summer, the Ministry of Justice told the girls' families that Pitchfork had been allowed to leave their custody under the close supervision of prison service personnel. So he's getting to do these like day outings,
furloughs,
where he can leave for the day, occasionally overnight, and then come back to jail, maybe sometimes. And it's what's called an open jail. For a guy that was sentenced to life in prison, it seems kind of lax to me.
Yeah.
In April of 2009, so we're going back a bit, there was a sculpture that Pitchfork had created in prison, and that was displayed at the Royal Festival Hall, and the artwork was called Bringing the Music to Life, which was, it was like a sculpture, and this goes into detail of what it looks like, but who gives a shit? when this all was going down, there was a lot of outrage in the community, because victim advocate groups were saying that his art being on display was disrespectful. Like, we shouldn't laud the art of a man who, so he made the art while in prison, and the words on a caption said, "Without this opportunity to show our art, many of us would have no incentive. We would stay locked in ourselves as much as the walls that hold us." Who gives a fuck?
Yeah, I would agree with
anyway,
you on that one.
Anyway, so now he gets to tootle about town.
No, tootling about.
Just tootling about. Mm-hmm. There was a report last year that he was in Leicestershire and that he had introduced himself to a woman there who said that he was like super creepy. Later, that report was debunked, and they said there are specific rules. He is never allowed in that city again. Mm. But nearby, he can be tootling, and there's nothing that it's just, I do not approve.
There are some, I don't know, my opinion here. There are some things that are not forgivable.
The rape and murder of children?
That would be one of them.
I would say, yeah.
Certainly.
I absolutely approve of that. That is the story of Colin Pitchfork, the first person convicted of murder based on DNA fingerprinting evidence.
Wow.
Who now gets to tootle about town.
You done with that Crystal Pepsi?
I cannot think of Crystal Pepsi without thinking of that SNL sketch. I think it was from the early 90s where they were advertising the water coming straight from the Hudson River. And it was like thick and had stuff.
Yeah, cigarette butts.
Yeah,
pieces of metal.
Anyway, that's what Crystal Pepsi makes me think of.
Really?
So this story, I really, it's interesting because of the DNA testing and the amazing lengths that we have. I mean, we've come so far.
Yeah.
But since he gets to tootle about, look at how far we still have to go.
Yeah, indeed. But Crystal Pepsi.
Right. That's better. That's less shitty.
Maybe Crystal Pepsi would have done better if they'd used that as the advertising slogan.
Less shitty than the premature release of a rapist and murderer?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be good on a poster.
So we're the Box of Oddities. We have been for a while now. Not quite a year, but we're coming up on our 1 year anniversary.
I'm so excited. I think we should do something fun.
Well, we're going to be in...
We're going to be in Orlando.
We're going to be in Orlando. We've been asked to speak at the Podcast 2019 convention.
Yeah.
In Orlando.
We're going to be on a panel or something that I don't know what to expect.
Yeah,
and I'm
no
going to be taking some pills to deal with.
So we're flying to Nashville for the live show.
It's going to be amazing.
Which, by the way, there are still tickets available, theboxofoddities.com.
And then we're tootling over to Pigeon Forge for a couple days to go to some museums, et cetera, et cetera.
And then we're flying to Orlando for the PodFest convention. And then we'll be flying back to Maine after that. So
but
it's going to be a busy
couple
of weeks.
We're also going to go to Epcot.
We're going to go to Epcot. Yes, we are.
I've never been to that World Lake place.
World Showcase.
Yeah, I've never been there.
No, it's one of
I'm going to eat a pretzel and drink a beer.
There you go.
I'm very much looking forward to it.
The Box of Oddities drops on your phone a couple days a week. We look forward to seeing you on Thursday.
Until then, keep flying that freak flag.
Fly it proudly, you beautiful freak.
And so...
Let it be known that the Box of Oddities belongs to you, and its fate is in your hands. The Box of Oddities commits to the telling of stories, stories of the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected. TheBoxOfOddities.com. Copyright 2019. All rights reserved.
Do you love history but hate when it's stuffy and boring? Well, look no further and join me, Katie Charlwood, your friendly neighborhood social scientist and reader of books, as I delve into unsolved historical mysteries, murders by gaslight, and of course, women who have been misrepresented through all time. On Who Did What Now, the history podcast that's not your history class. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Neil.
And I'm Ken.
And we are from the Triviality Podcast, a pub trivia-style game show where a lack of seriousness meets a little bit of knowledge.
Join us each week for an hour-long game of general knowledge trivia featuring special guests from around the world, plus tons of extra themed episodes.
If you want to improve your trivia game,
or you just want to scream at us in your car when we get easy questions wrong,
then we're the show for you. Find Triviality on all your favorite podcast apps.
But you know that because you're already listening to a podcast.